Good morning. Today's Avma Mitzia is Chaf Aleph. We're going to finish the first parak of the Masechta, begin the second. Let's conclude. We are up to Rav Shem Gamla Omer, Echad Alova Mishloshi Yachzir Alova. Okay, so a lengthy discussion that we had so far here in the first parak of Mitzia regarding what happens when you find a shtar, or for that matter, any kind of paperwork. So what do I do? So I return it. So that's easy, right? It's not easy. And in fact, we know it's not easy. We've been discussing it now for well over a week. The sugya started all the way back on Daf Yud Beis. And here we are in Daf Chaf, which means that this is an eight-daf venture, in which we're discussing what happens if I find various documentations, standard loan documents, or other types of documentations, and do I return it to its owner? First of all, identification of who the owner of a document is, and then various concerns in terms of whether we should or should not return them. Yesterday, the Mishnah in Daf Chaf, which finally we got to, we quoted the Mishnah numerous times, And finally we got to it, and that is that the Mishnah talks about court documents. So when it comes to a court document, what the Mishnah described as a Maisa Beis Din, Sarei Zei Achzer, so that you're going to return. In other words, when you have court documents, so there's no such thing as a drafting of a court document, meaning a court document is drafted and executed. In other words, we know it, we're confident, right? The things happen in the courtroom and they're not, and it's not, you know, it's not a thought. It's not a consideration. Maybe I'm going to borrow the money. Maybe I'm not going to borrow the money. So anyway, so for that, you're going to absolutely return it to its owner. Good. That's the sugya that we did yesterday, and we're now just wrapping up. A couple of other points made in the Mishnah, and that is that even by private documents, you're going to return them if there's a simon. So what does that mean if there's a simon? So good. That's what we get to discuss right now. So Rav Shimon Gamla Omer Echalovim Mishoshi Yachzir Lova. So let's say I find a bundle of notes, and it happens to be that I'm reading the same name of the same borrower in each one of the notes. No, okay. Normally the note. Normally the note. Just give me 1 second. Normally the notes are held by the lender. In other words, that's normally who the note holder is. The note holder is a lender. But over here, it's a little bit odd. In other words, we got three notes, and they were bundled together, and they all have the same borrower on them. So the Mishnah says, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, what do? I return it to the borrower. Okay, Phil asked the question: are they tied up? So yesterday, the Gemara asked a similar question, meaning whether or not Kesher is considered a simon or not considered a simon. So, but let's just for our purposes, let's just simply say that they're wrapped together. Okay, so. So the Gemara just simply spells out, meaning it's the rational conclusion. It's reasonable. Why? Because if you think they belong to the Maven, my ba gabe hadade, meaning that's a little bit strange, right? They are three separate lenders, and they're bundled together. It's strange. It's too strange. And Dilma lekaminu azlo, and maybe I don't know. Maybe we're all going to get them notarized. So the Gemara says the mekami. No, the Gemara says no. They're already notarized. So Dilma midi de safra nafil. Maybe it fell from the sofa. So the Gemara says that's unlikely. So lamashi nishkima biyade de safra. No, if it's notarized, so it's not going to be by the sofa. That's also highly unlikely. So in other words, the reasonable conclusion is that if I got three notes and they all have the same borrower on it, belongs to the borrower. Okay. Shoshesh lava meyachad yachzul lamalva. Now if I have three notes that all have the same lender on it. Okay, so good. So give it back to the lender. So the Gemara says, look, if it belongs to the borrower, what are they doing together? Three separate borrowers. And Dilma lemichtavinu azle. So the Gemara says, I don't know. Maybe the three borrowers went to the same sofer. And so over here, so maybe in fact it does belong to the borrower. So the Gemara says, no, they didn't go to the same sofer. Three different handwritings, three different sofrim. V'dilma lekaminu azle. So the Gemara says, well, maybe they were all being taken to be notarized. The Gemara says, well, that's ridiculous. Mava mekayim shtarei lo v'la mekayim shtarei. Meaning, who's interested in notarizing a document? Not the borrower. Borrower's not interested in notarizing a document. The notarization of a document is there for purposes of collection. Right? Obviously, the lender's going to notarize a document. Borrower's not going to notarize a document. Okay. So a quick dismissal. And so therefore, the Gemara just simply spelled out that if I find three documents bundled together, if they're all sharing the same borrower, return to the borrower. If they're all sharing the same lender, return to the lender. So far, so good. Now, what if I find a receipt? So then give the receipt to its rightful owner. So the Amrav Yirmiyah Barab Amrav Simpon Yotze Mitachas Yidei Mave. So Afa Pi Shekasu B'Ksav Yadoi No El Kemesachek Kapasol. Okay, so we have a statement by Rav, going all the way back to Rav, and that is that I find a Simpon. Simpon is another way to describe a shover. Right, Rashi. This goes back to yesterday's daf, which we're still in. But okay. So the word simpon itself, if you take a look at Rashi in yesterday's daf, back in the Mishnah. So the word simpon. No, it's not Rashi back in the Mishnah. I thought it was. Anyway, the Rashi explains the actual word itself. It's a mum. It's a blemish. And so, in other words, what the shofar does is that it blemishes the note. Okay. Like the imagery. You don't like the imagery. But the point is that simpon is just simply synonymous with a shofar. Okay. And again, remember, in other words, generally speaking, how does the note conclude? The note generally concludes by the borrower paying back the money, the borrower now taking the note, and then immediately tearing it up. Okay. But as we already learned the number of occasions, and the Gemara at the end of Baba Basra, is going to discuss this in more detail, and that is that sometimes you just simply want a receipt that you paid. You want a receipt that you paid. So you find a receipt, and who do you return it to? So in our mission, it sounds like, well, you just simply return it to the owner. And the Gemara now quotes B'Shem Rav. No. Simpon Yotze, I'm just reading it again. Simpon Yotze Mitachas Yidei Malve. So let's say, that you have a simpon, and where is it right now? So it is by the lender. Simpon's by the lender. So, and even though it is written b'ksav yado, in other words, the handwritten receipt by the lender, so ein ala k'mesachek upasol. So at that point in time, it doesn't have any legal significance, and it's not going to be a legally valid receipt. Now the Gemara goes on to explain this even better. Lo mi bai kasav b'ksav yado sofer d'ikla meimer safri yisrael melei v'kasav. Meaning, if I have a sofer writing a receipt, so there, I know for sure that it has no legal validity whatsoever. In other words, the sofer pre-writes stuff all the time, right? Sofer knows that people are coming in and picking up documents, and so what the sofer is going to do is that the sofer is just simply going to write things in advance. So if I find a receipt by the sofer, I know, right, you can't say anything conclusive about it. In other words, sofer draft documents all the time. Okay, so... So it doesn't legally mean anything. Ela afilu kasu b'ksav yado pasul. But Rav is making a bigger statement, which is that it's a handwritten receipt written by the lender, and even still, it doesn't have significance. Why? Gemara explains. So the sover doma misrami v'alse ben hashmashos v'kaparali edio lo yavina le lo yav le zuze ich tavana dechiaisi le zuze etin le. And the Gemara explains that even a handwritten receipt by the lender is just simply a draft. It could very well be a draft. So how is it a draft? They're very simple. Meaning, let's anticipate. What's going to happen is that my borrower is going to come on Erev Shabbos. Everything happens on Erev Shabbos. Right? Just an hour before Shabbos, that's when it happens. Right? When does my AC stop? So an hour before Shabbos. So they, okay. Right? You know the feeling. Yeah. So the, So... I invested in a wet vac. You'll be happy and proud. Okay. So what's going to happen is that my borrower is going to come on Erev Shabbos, an hour before Shabbos, and he's going to be like, I'm here. I'm ready to pay back the loan. I got to be prepared. So in other words, I'm drafting the receipt because I know that what's going to happen is that I'm ready to pay, but I'm only going to pay if I get a receipt. Ah, I'm ready. I'm prepared. I got the receipt in hand. So for that anticipation, people are going to pre-write receipts. So Rav's point is that if I have a receipt, and even though it was handwritten, and it was handwritten by the lender, it doesn't mean that the loan was paid. Good. So with that stated, so now that's a statement to Rav. We just explained it, and now we're going to see whether or not we could support it. Meaning, what about our Mishnah? What about other Mishnayos? So this is how we're going to finish off the first parak of Bamitzia. So Tanani Miyesh Bahamim Simponos Yase Mashim Simponos. So the Gemara says, now, what if I find a receipt? So return it back to its rightful owner. That's what our Mishnah said. Oh, that's great. But Rav told us just the opposite. If I find a receipt, it has no validity. Don't return it back to its owner. By the way, the owner would be the borrower, presumably. So the Gemara says, Kedam Rav Safra, Nimsa Bein Shtaros Kruyim, Hachadami, Matsu Bein Shtaros Kruyim. So the Gemara says, in Ukimta, in the Mishnah, and that is, that yes, I found a receipt, but I found a receipt amongst torn loan documents. Okay. Now I know it's a little bit strange, by the way, but we're going to keep hearing this answer again and again, so let's see if I can explain it. I'm going to try. And that is that I have a lender right now who's got loan documents, but they're all torn up. Okay. Or it doesn't have to be in the hand of the lender. It could just simply be out there. They're all torn up. Why are they torn up? Because done, finished. The loan is over. And again, as I explained just minutes earlier, meaning generally speaking, the conclusion of a loan ends with a torn loan document. So I have a whole bunch of torn loan documents. And tucked away in that same bundle, I have a receipt. Ah. Now we can put the picture together. Well, if I have torn loan documents and I have a receipt, probably belongs to the borrower. Now the likelihood is that it in fact belongs to the borrower. In other words, makes sense. Meaning if the loan documents were locked and loaded, so that means that though they belong to the lender, and that means that the receipt belongs to the lender, what? That doesn't make, right? That's hard to piece together. But if the loan documents are torn and I have a receipt tucked away with it, now the likely explanation, the probable explanation is they all belong to the borrower. And under those circumstances, and only under those circumstances, now I could take the receipt and give it back to the borrower. Good. Tashma, Nimsa Lechad, Bein Shtarasav, Shtar Yosef Ben Shema Parua. So, Shtarashneim Pruim. So now, we have a receipt, and the receipt writes that Yosef Ben Shimon paid back his loan. And the absurd situation over here is that how many people in the town are named Yosef Ben Shimon? Two. Okay, good. It's not so absurd. Anyway, so two Yosef Ben Shimons are there in town. And this particular note says that Yosef and Shimon paid back the loan, so now they both paid back the loan. In other words, it's a receipt, and I'm not only going to be awarding it to the borrower in terms of properly having satisfied paid back his loan, but because two people share that name and they both borrowed money, so now I'm going to be able to award it to both of them. I know that part's strange, but the point over here is that I'm taking the receipt that we found and I'm awarding it to the borrower. Well, that's exactly what Rav says we're not going to do. So again, the Gemara says, Kedama Rav Safra, Nimsa Bein Shtaros Kruyim, Hachanami, Nimsa Bein Shtaros Kruyim. Okay, so the Gemara says it wasn't just a receipt found by itself, but rather it was a receipt that was found amongst torn loan documents. See above for the explanation. Tashma, this is now round three. Shvu Shalom Pekadnu Abba, Vishalom Arlanu Abba, Vishalom Matzana Bein Shtaros Rav Shal Abba. Okay, so what happens when you go after an estate? So the Mishnah and Shavuos tells us that the Yorshe Hamalve, other direction. State's going after an individual. In other words, dad had a loan, and meaning dad was a lender, and dad died, and now what the estate's going to do is the estate's going to collect. Okay, in other words, the estate. Part of the estate is the note itself, the bond itself, and they now want to collect. Great. So the estate's going to go collect. They have every right to do so. In other words, it's a documented loan, so the estate now can go ahead and collect. No problem, but the Mishnah Shvuah says, let's just make sure that the loan was in fact not paid. Well, how are we going to make sure? Well, there's no way to really make sure, but we'll have the kids making a Shvuah. Kids are going to make a shvuah. What does that shvuah sound like? The Mishnah says exactly what it sounds like. Shvuah shlo pakanu abba. In other words, we were given no instructions from dad that the loan was already paid up. Lo amar nala abba. Dad didn't say anything regarding it. Lo matzana bein sharasof shlo abba sheshar ze parua. And we found no receipts amongst dad's documents that the loan was already paid up. Okay, good. So in other words, what's happening over here is that the kids are going to make a shvuah. Basically, we don't know anything otherwise. Okay? And when you think about it, by the way, it makes perfect sense. I mean, what other shvuah can the kids make? But they're going to make that shvuah. that right now all we are left with in terms of what we inherited from dad is a note. It's a collectible. It's an account receivable. And we don't know anything otherwise that the loan was in fact paid. So we're here to collect. Good. Now, one of the things they are testing to is that there were no receipts. Wait a second. There were no receipts. Meaning, even if there was a receipt, we just said that a receipt being held by the lender has no legal significance. Again, now, you already know what the Gemara is going to say. Amar Rav Safra, Nimsa Bein Shtarz Kruyim. Again, same basic idea. And that was is that it wasn't a standalone receipt. It was a receipt found amongst torn documents. So again, contextually, we now know that the receipt is a valid receipt. Tashma. Simpon Sheish Alav Eidim Yiskayim B'chosmav. Okay, so if I have a receipt, this is a Tosefta. If I have receipt and there are witnesses, so Yiskayim B'chosmav, so what you're going to do is you're going to simply notarize. Okay, so what it sounds like over here is that what we did is we found a receipt and we'll notarize it and we'll validate it. And presumably, even if the receipt is found in the hands of the malva, we're going to notarize it and validate it. Now, again, Rav said that if a receipt is being held by anyone other than borrower, it has no legal significance. That's what Rav said. We've been defending this position now for the beginning of today's daf. For the last 15 minutes, we've been defending this position. And meanwhile, the Tosefta says, in other words, you find a receipt, just notarize it, you're good. So and presumably even if the lender was holding it. So Ema Yiskayem Mechos Mav. So the Gemara says, okay. So no. In other words, what the receipt already did is that the receipt was already signed and it was held by the borrower. And all we're looking to do right now is validate it. The Shailina Lulasadi Parua Lo Parua. Meaning we're gonna go ask the witnesses themselves, hey. Was this loan paid or not paid? So fine. Tashma simpon sheish alav edim kasher. So my edim edikiyum. So the Gemara says, if I have a receipt that has valid with signatures, it's a good receipt. And presumably, that's even if the mav is holding on to it. And again, this is a kasha on Rav. So once again, the Gemara says, nah, edim or edikiyum. No, we're just looking at the witnesses who are notarizing. So Hachinam in Mustafa, the Gemara says, in fact, I think we're right about this. Why? Midikani Seifa in Alav Eidim Pasul. So because look at the continuation of that Braisa. You know, if there are no witnesses, the receipt's no good. Now, if there are no witnesses, think about what I just said. If there are no witnesses, the receipt's no good. So Midikani Seifa Shein Alav Eidim Pasul. My in Alav Eidim. Ilam Adalaki Ilav Eidim Klal Tzrich Lamem the Pasul. You mean to tell me that there are no witnesses on it whatsoever? That's absurd. If there are no witnesses on it whatsoever, and it's just a receipt that the loan has been paid, right? Satisfaction of payment. But meanwhile, there are no witnesses. Of course, it's not a good document. I don't need a braisa to tell me that. So I love edikiyum. So no, in other words, we're not talking about where there are no witnesses. There are witnesses on it. It's just what we're missing is the notarizing. Okay. Adkan, we have now concluded and successfully defended Rav. Rav says that if I have a receipt and the receipt's being held by the lender, and even though it was handwritten, it does not have validity. And again, for the explanation of, he's just simply anticipating payment and he wants to be prepared with the receipt so that he can quickly hand it to the borrower when the borrower in fact is ready to pay. And what we did now for the first 20 minutes of today's daf is we're just simply, what about this mishnah? What about that price? And what about that Tosefta? Numerous indications that no receipts are in fact valid, even if not being held by the borrower. And consistently, the Gemara says, no. All right. Most of the time, the Gemara's answer is that no, it's limited to a situation where the receipt was held with torn documents. Torn documents obviously are loans that have already been satisfied. The receipt that's found with the torn documents will say the same thing. But if it's just a standalone receipt, that in of itself does not have validity. If it's not being held by the borrower. Gufa. One more point in order to finish up the first parak of the Masechta. Simpon sheyesh lav edim, yiskayim b'chos mav. So, ein alav edim, so v'yotzei mitach yidei shlish, o sheyotzei la'achar chitim sharos. So, the So we quoted part of the Braisa, now we're quoting the Braisa in full. Again, it's a Tosefta. So if I have a receipt that has witnesses on it, so then just simply notarize it, and you're good. However, if there are no witnesses on it, and again, we explained already witnesses over here, meaning there's no notarization, or in other words, it wasn't the lova that was holding it, but rather it was a third party holding it. Alternatively, it was the receipt was written on the note itself. It was not a separate piece of paper, but on the note itself, you have a receipt on the bottom saying loan was paid. So in any one of those cases, kasher would be kasher. So yotze mitachis de shlish ha hemne hamav l'shlish. So the Gemara goes on to give just very quick explanations. If the receipt is being held by a third party, so then we go ahead and we trust the fact that it was in fact paid. Why? Because it wasn't a lost document, but rather it was a entrusted document, meaning the lender entrusted a third party to hold on to it. So now that the lender entrusted the third party to hold on to it, so that affords the third party credibility. And if the receipt itself is written onto the loan document, meaning as an addendum, as an appendage to the loan document, that this loan document was paid, and obviously, again, that addendum was signed by two witnesses, so that also, in other words, it's now built into the document, and therefore, under these two circumstances, the receipt will, in fact, indicate that there was, in fact, satisfaction of payment. Hadron alach shtayim oksim, and that is the end of the first parak of the Masechta. Okay, we are now 20 blind into the Masechta, and a sizable first parak of the Masechta. And here we go now with Parak Sheni, second parak. Second parak is an extraordinarily popular parak, right? Typically in the yeshivas, when the boys are starting Gemara, this is it. This is the parak that they choose. It's a pretty straightforward parak, at least the beginning. Although, quite frankly, in the Amud Beis of today's daf, we start getting involved in a discussion on Lemafreya. Not really sure how a 11-year-old understands Lemafreya, but okay. Doesn't matter. But at least the beginning of the parak is very straightforward, and that is there's a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Now, quite frankly, we have been talking about Hashavas Aveda for a good part of the first parak. Meaning the first part of the first parak, we started the first parak with money that lays in dispute, and what to do with that disputed money. And both of us are holding on to the shtar, and what do we do under those circumstances? How do we divide it? And with a shvuah, without a shvuah, good. But then, right, basically from Daf Yud Beis and onward in the first parak, what if I find a shtar? What do I do with the shtar? Do I give it back to the lender? Do I not give it back to the lender? Good. Now here in the second parak, so we're just going to straightforward have a discussion regarding, you find an item, you return it to its owner. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. It's a mitzvah of a Shavas Aveda. The pasuk in Devarim, Chav Beis, Lo sira ashur achicha oseyo nidachim v'salam tamehem ashev tishivim la'achicha. Okay, I'll just keep reading a little bit more. V'im lo karov achicha elech v'lo yidato v'asavta ol toch beitecha. V'aya imcha adrosh achicha. Oso v'ashev oso lo. So step number one, return it to its owner. Step number two, if the owner's not accessible, hang on to it. And then return it to the owner. So, and you're going to do that with any lost item. It doesn't matter whether the item is inanimate or adamant. You're going to go ahead and you're going to return it. And if necessary, you're going to take care of it and then return it. And the Torah says, Lo suchal le'salem. You cannot turn an eye to it. Torah fully recognizes the fact that when you see a lost item, it is an awesome responsibility, and especially if it's a live animal, to have to now take it into your home and take care of it, and then only to find the owner later and to return it to him, that's a hefty responsibility. Thank you, but no thank you. You know what? I really don't see the lost item, right? In other words, that's the human psychology and basically the bystander effect. And what the Torah is telling you is, yeah, don't say that. Meaning, lo suchal le'salem. You can't cover your eyes from it. If you see it, you have to take the responsibility. Good. So over the course of this parak, what are we going to learn together? And that is this mitzvah of returning a lost item. and all of its ramifications and all of its details. Let's begin. Eilu Metzius Shalov, Eilu Metzius Ve'elu Chayiv LaHachris. So now the Mishnah opens up right away with, you know, sometimes you find a lost item, you have to return it. Sometimes, finders keepers. Okay, so which one's which? When do we say finders keepers? So as Rashi points out over here, right in the beginning of the Perek, you know when we're going to say finders keepers, where there's no simon, and so therefore we can assume yeish, and therefore there's and therefore we can assume hefker, right? Rashi basically takes us through those three steps. You can take a look at Rashi number one. You can take a look at Rashi number two. Either one, right? Either Rashi basically takes us through the three steps. Right, take a look at Rashi number one. I know we didn't read the Mishnah yet, but matzam peres mefuzarim nis yashu habalin mehen kedamra bigmara vehefker hein. So there's yesh. Now we'll add, by the way, it's going to be clear in the Mishnah. There's yesh because there's no telltale sign that it belongs to the owner. So there is no simon that allows the owner to identify it. So therefore, when the owner loses it, the owner's like, it's not going to be recovered. And if it is, it's not going to be identified and connected to me. Yeush. He gave up hope on getting it. And then Rashi also then adds step number three, right? My three steps. My three steps are no simon, yeush. And then Rashi adds step number three is going to be hefker. Okay. This point of Rashi that there is that step three of hefker, right? Much discussed in terms of, right? Isn't yeush by itself sufficient? Right? Why does Rashi say Yesh and Hefker? And by the way, Rashi does it a second consecutive time. Again, I know I didn't read the Mishnah, but look at Rashi number two. Hol ve'ein lam siman nikar iyush miyash v'havelu hefker. Okay. Rashi number two, I have to admit, by the way, Rashi seems to basically conflate Yesh and Hefker, meaning they're not like I proposed just moments earlier. Like it's two different steps, but rather Yeush equals Hefker, something along those lines. Again, for a lengthier shiur, you discuss this in more detail, but I'm just simply highlighting right now. Let's go back to the Mishnah. Maos Mefuzaros, if you find just simply money, currency, and there's nothing more generic than currency. And so therefore, when you lose the currency, so there's no way you're going to identify it. Again, later we're going to discuss that if it was configured in a certain way, so then, yes. So maybe, yes. So under those circumstances, you could identify it. But right now, it's just scattered money, or krichos birushos arabim, or let's say there are sheaves. Okay, I'm going to keep saying the word sheaves, and I'm still not going to know what they are. But I understand. Basically, they are, you know, bundles of wheat. Great. And I found them in the birushos arabim. Migulei dvela, okay, cakes of figs, kikar shenachtom, baker's bread. Machrosu shel dagim, strong fish, chaticho shel basar, cut meat, gizei tzema lekuchim imedina san, shorn wool. So all these are standard and therefore have no simon. Anitzei pishtan, flax, bundles of flax. Lashona shel argaman. So we are talking about wool and it was dyed purple. And harei elu shelo. Again, all these things are standard. They have no identifying mark to them, and therefore, finders keepers. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So that is Shitas Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kol Sheyesh Bo Shinui Chayev LaHachris. Now Rabbi Yehuda says that if there's a Shinui, if there's something unusual, so now once there's something unusual, once you find any kind of anomaly, you can now pronounce, not can, you must pronounce and announce to the world, this is what I lost. So Amar Kol Sheyesh Bo Shinui Chayev LaHachris. Keitza Matzah Igel V'Socho Cheres Kikar U'V'Socho Maos. So I'm finding these generic items, but strange, unusual. So the a cake of figs, but right there in the middle of the cake, some pottery. It's weird, exactly. So in other words, so you announce and Kikar U'V'Socho Maos, and you find bread and money's in the bread. Okay, we will later discuss exactly what you're going to announce and how you're going to publicize and broadcast to the world in terms of what you find. In other words, what you're going to have to do. We're going to see this later in the perek, is that you don't want to announce exactly what you found. You want the person to be able to identify it with its marker. Okay, we'll get to that later. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Amar Kol Kli'an Puri Ein Chayv LaHachriz, and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that when I have Clay on Pore, no need to announce. Rashi says, no need to figure out what that is right now, because the Gemara later on is going to discuss that. So we'll wait till later on. Matzah Peros Mifuzarim Vikama. So, example number one of the Mishnah, and that is that I found fruit, and it was all scattered. Scattered fruit, so there is no marker in terms of identifying who it belongs to. Finders keepers. Now, Am Rabbi Yitzchak Kav Be'arba Amos. Okay, so, we have a Masara going back to Rabbi Yitzchak, and that is that, what does that mean, scattered? So, it means a Kav, that's a volume of the fruit, in a space of four Amos. So what the Gemara is basically saying is that we have to give definition to scattered, and the Gemara gives an extremely specific definition of how much fruit we're talking about volume-wise within a certain area. So, and if I have it, so then it is in fact considered halachically scattered, therefore yeyush, therefore hefker. The Gemara discusses hechidami, I derech nafila afilu tuvanami. So the Gemara says, vi derech inuach afilu batzim hachinami lo. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If it's derech nafila, meaning if it was clearly not intentionally put over there, it fell. In other words, I'm looking forensically at the fruit on the floor. There's no order. There's no seder. It's scattered. So the Gemara says, so even if it's more than a kav, so what are you going to tell me? The owner is going to come back for it? Meaning it was clearly dropped. Clearly. And so why then would we say that, oh, it can only be considered scattered if it's a certain amount within a certain area? No. If it was dropped, it was dropped. Period. And if it was placed over there, in other words, nice and organized, so even if it's less than a kav, clearly the owner put it over there, intentionally, the owner's going to come back. He wasn't miyayish. So we gave a very specific shiur, but the Gemara wants to understand, when do we apply that shiur? Am ravuk v'abrachama b'mach nashta de'beidari askinan. So what happened over here is as follows, and that is we cleared out the granary. We cleared out the granary, and not all of it was cleared out. And so, so kav b'arba amos de'nafish tarachay olo tarachinish. So the Gemara says like this. Ah. So now basically what happened was is that the owner went into a granary. Now, I know, by the way, I'm thinking it, I probably others as well. Whose granary is it? Is it his own? It's a little bit strange, by the way, because if it's his own, you don't think he's going to go back there? Anyway. Whatever. Let's assume the granary is not his. Anyway, he goes into a granary and he clears it out of his. In other words, his wheat's there, his fruit's there. And now he cleared out most of it. There's still a little bit left. Is he going to come back for that little bit? That's when I need a shear. So in other words, it wasn't dropped. He didn't place it there intentionally. In other words, what he was doing is that he was clearing an area and he left a little bit over. Oh. So is he going to come back for that little bit? Now we could talk about the shear. If it's a kava fruit within a four ama, within a 4x4 ama area, so for that now, less than that, not significant, not worth his time. He's going to be miyash. He's going to make it hefker. On the other hand, more fruit than that in that area, now then at that point in time, worth it to him to come back. He's not going to be mafker it. Good. That's the explanation of our Mishnah. And by Rav Yirmiyah, and the Gemara now is going to ask an assortment of questions, and this will take us to the bottom of the Amud Aleph. Let's go. So now we have a shear, a kav within a 4x4 amah area. So now let's do the following, and that is that do we prorate that shear? What if it is a chatzi kav in a 2x2? Now, I know, by the way, also, like, I speak a little geometry. In other words, I know. David's thinking it, I'm thinking it, and that is 2x2 is not half of 4x4. Okay, I got you. It's a quarter. Okay, so when the Gemara probably means over here is 2x4, whatever. Do we prorate? Let's just keep it nice and simple. So chatzi kav v'shtei amos mahu kav b'arba amos time amai mishum d'nafish t'chayu chatzi kav v'shtei amos kevin d'lo nafish t'chayu lo mafke lehu. So again, I can make the argument of, even though it's a prorated amount, but it's not that big a deal. In other words, it's not that much work to go back and to get a chatzikav oduma mishum delo chashiva. And chatzikav v'sheyamas kevin delo chashiva mafka lohu. So alternatively, what you could say is the following. What is the significance of a kavan and 4x4? The significance is, it's not significant. Right? Didn't mean all that alliteration, but it's good. Right? The significance of that shear is that it's not that significant amount. It's not that much. And so therefore, it's not worth my time. And so therefore, we would prorate. Meaning, okay, and if it's a chatzikav and a 2x2, right, or probably 2x4, so again, it's not significant. And we could prorate in the other direction. What if it's two kav in an 8 amma area? So kav arba amas tamamai mishum denafish terchayu kol shekin kavayim b'shmon amas kevin denafish terchayu tfei mafke lahu. So if it's a question of, I don't want to expend energy, so here, if it's 8 kav in an area of 8 ammas, so that's a lot to come back for. That's a lot of picking up, and I'm not ready to expend that energy. And certainly here, where it's a greater area and a lot more fruit, I'm not ready for that kind of effort. Alternatively, it's a question of chashivas. If it's just 1 kav in a 4 amma area, not the chashav. 2 kav, I know it's 8 ammas, but it's 2 kav. It's chashav. And therefore, I go back. Let's ask a third question. Kav shum shumim barba amas mahu. So kav barba amas tamamai mishum delo chashive, shum shum kev de chashive lo mafkalu. Let's say I have a kav. Again, kav is a volume measurement. And it's a fruit. But what kind of fruit are we talking about? Sesame seeds. And so therefore, sesame seeds, you can make the argument of, right, a kav of sesame seeds, that's a really big deal. Odilma mishum de nafish terchayu and kol shekin shum shum and kem de nafish terchayu tfei mafker luhu. Alternatively, imagine picking up a kav of sesame seeds, right? They're small little seeds, and that's a lot of effort. And maybe all this is a function of, I'm not ready to invest and put in the effort. So that's true by fruit. It certainly would be true by sesame seeds as well, and therefore it would belong. You are going to be mafker it. This is now question number 4, if I'm keeping good track. And that is kav tamrei ba'arba amos. What if it's dates? Kav rimoni ba'arba amos. What if it's pomegranates? So mahu. So kav ba'arba amos tamamai mishum delo chashive. Kav tamrei ba'arba amos. Kav rimoni ba'arba amos nami. Kiv delo chashive mafke lohu. So look, maybe it's a function of chashivas. And again, if it's 1 kav in a 4 amma area, just not that significant. So, irrespective of what the fruit is, odilma mishum de nefishi tarchayu, kav tamei barabamos, kav rimoni barabamos, kevin de lo nafish tarchayu, lo mafkehu. But if we're talking about a date, if we're talking about pomegranates, it's not that big a deal. It's not that much effort to go and pick it up. These pomegranates are large. I'm only going to have to bend down a limited number of times in order to pick it up. It's not that much effort. And so therefore, maybe the argument over here is that it's a function of effort. Here, I'm ready to put in the effort. Take them. Okay. We just asked a series of 4 different questions, and presumably the take over here is going on all 4 questions. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the first half of today's daf. Let's continue. So here we opened up the second parak of the Masechta, and that is that you find a lost item. Times where you can keep it. Times where you must return it. So our focus right now are on the times in which you're going to be able to keep it. Why? Because there's Yeush. And so therefore it's Hefker. And so therefore you pick it up and you can keep it. Itmar, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, and we embark on a classic discussion. So here, right, this is one of the reasons why it's such a popular parak amongst the young. And that is Yeush Lamidas. So what happens of the following, and that is that person lost an item, he didn't know that he lost it yet. Okay, now, he didn't know that he lost it yet. Okay, so first of all, if the image in your head right now is that, let's say a person's walking in and he drops a dollar bill. So, and you saw that happen. So, you know what you should do? You should pick up the dollar bill and you should go run over to him and give it back to him. So not really the right imagery over here. The imagery over here is that he lost a dollar bill, but he didn't know he lost it yet. And what's happening now is that he's headed home and he won't get home for another hour, 2 hours, whatever the case is. And in that interim now, you come along. You didn't see it fall from him, but you come along now, you pick it up. So when he gets home and discovers that the dollar is now lost, so for sure at that point in time now going forward, let's call that T2, from that point going forward, so for sure, yayush. And for sure, it will, and anyone who picks it up from that point going forward, it will be the owner of that item. The problem is that you picked it up before T2. You picked it up when at a point between T1 and T2. T1 is when it fell from him. T2 is when he discovered that it fell from him. So you picked it up in that interim period. So this is what halachically now is called Yeish Olamidas. And this is a classic discussion that's had in the Gemara, and that is as follows. Do we say at T2, at the point of discovery, that he's going to be Miyash, and that goes retroactively back to T1? Do we say that? Yes or no? And what do we have over here? One of our most classic machloks in between Abai and Rava. Yeish Olamidas, Abai Amar Lo Havi Yeish V'Rava Amar Havi Yeish. So Abai says, we're not going to go back retroactively. Rava says, we are going to go back retroactively. Okay. I had a thought that, oh, in other words, there's another machlokus between Abai and Rava, also classic and also popular, and that's in the third parak of Sanhedrin, and that is Edim Zomamim. So when they become pasul, do they become pasul in Mafreya, or do they become pasul only Mikana Lahaba? So it's funny, just whatever. Please indulge me for just a moment. I will not belabor this thought. But so I'm thinking to myself, oh, so right, so they're going to be consistent, right? In other words, just like over here, Abai will not go back retroactively, so too over there, by Edim Zomim, Abai will not go back retroactively, uh-huh. Right? And, right, so I did my research this morning, so I looked up the Gemara Sanhedrin, and, right, nope. Meaning, over there, Abai does go back retroactively. So, in my mind, I like to think, oh, in other words, so Abai is consistently going to go back retroactively or consistently not going to go back retroactively. And no, it's a case-by-case basis. Okay. Anyway, my thought is over. We're back over here. So it is a case-by-case basis. Anyway, what we're discussing right now is Yeish Olamidas. So even though he discovers later that he lost it, are we ready to say that the Yeish retroactively goes back to the time in which he actually lost it? So Machlokes Abai and Rava. And the Gemara says now, just to make sure that we're all clear. So B'davish Yeish Bo Simen Kulei Amal Lo Pligi Delo Havi Yeish Rav Agav Deshamin Edim Yeish Lesov Lo Havi Yeish Dichias Liyadei Bisur Hu Das Liyadei Delichi Yada Denafal Minei Lo Mi Yeish Veimam Resiman Esli Begave Yavin Esiman Veshakin Olei. Okay. So here we are now on one side of the spectrum. There's a simon on the item. And he dropped it. You picked it up. You do not get to keep it. And even if subsequently he said, you know what? I know there's a simon on the item, but you know, forget it. I don't care about it anymore. I don't want it back. You don't get to keep it, and no one will argue that you get to keep it. Because you picked up an item with a simon, and even though at a later point in time he's miyayesh, that for sure will not go back retroactively. No one will entertain that thought. Okay. The Gemara's language over here is so strong. Isurihu de'asaliyadeh. It came to your hand in Isser. Meaning because the item had a simon on it, you have absolutely no right to that item. And even though a later yesh occurred, that will not retroactively reflect. Okay, the Gemara says, that's clear. And no one's going to debate that. And zuto shel yam, and shliluso shel nahar, afagav dias beis simon, rechman eshari kedabin lameim lekamen. So if it falls into the ocean, and even with a simon, so that is hefker immediately. We'll talk more about that later.
Even with a simon.
So keep pligi b'davar shein bo simon abai amar lo ayeush daha lo yada denafaminei and rava amar have ayeush delechi yada denafamimei miyayish meimar amar siman ilaleif lebegavei mehashtahu de miyayish. Okay. And so the only point of debate, the Gemara is just simply giving us our strike zones. The only time that they're debating is in a situation where there's no simon on the item. The person lost the item, didn't know that he lost it yet. So we're going to call that point going forward T1. And then only discover that he lost at a later point in time. We're calling that now T2. And now he for sure is going to be Miyash at T2. Meaning I lost an item that has no simon on it. There's no way it's going to come back to me. Is that Yesh now going to go back to T1? That's the machlokes between Rav and Abaye. Gemara just simply spells it out.
How does the finder know what time period he's in? Because if he knew whether or not there
was that's why immediately I think to myself, like, in other words, you saw the dollar fall from him, so you know, right? So you right, but you know he doesn't know, but then at the same time, right, at that point in time, you have to give it back to him, right? So I'm with you. In other words, it's easier to discuss in the abstract. It's much easier to discuss. But practically speaking, like, right, how are these times established and you don't know it's the owner? Okay, I'm recognizing it. So Tashma, okay, so what we're going to be doing today and tomorrow is that we're going to basically launch into, right, a dozen? Oh my gosh, look at that simon in front of us right now. It's more than a dozen. Okay, over a dozen different proofs for Abaye, Rava, etc., etc. Okay, so Tashma. So let's go. Let's begin. We have a couple more minutes today. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Tashma peres mefuzarim halo yada denafal minei. So the Gemara says, okay, peres mefuzarim. So, and again, what do we assume at the beginning of the perek? In other words, you dropped them. Now, right now, even at this early stage of the second perek, we know better. But just to play out the Gemara, you dropped the fruit. And he doesn't know that it fell from him. And meanwhile, you can pick it up, you can keep it. Okay, good. So and obviously this is a point for Rava. Okay, there are going to be a lot of points for Rava. But that's a point for Rava. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a point for Rava. Hama Ravuk v'barchama hacha b'mechnasha d'bizri askinan d'aveda mendasi. The Gemara says, no. In other words, you didn't drop the fruit. In other words, you were collecting from the silo. You were in the silo, you were in the warehouse, you were collecting. And then you almost finished collecting, and then you walked out and you left that little bit. And so it wasn't dropped from you. In other words, you left it there. Now, so in other words, it's not Yesh Lamidas. Okay. Number two, Tashma. Mos mefuzar sarelu shelo amai halo yada denafamine. So we're going back to the money. So drop money. So the finders keepers. So the Gemara says, okay, Hasam Nami Kid Rabbi Yitzchak, Damara, Damasu, Lamashrash, Bekisa, Becholsha, Visha. Once again, by the way, that's Yer Shalom Das, you get to keep it. Once again, it's going to be a point for Rava. So the Gemara says, no, Hasam Nami Kid Rabbi Yitzchak, Damara, Damasu, Lamashmesh, Bekiso, Becholsha, Visha, Hachanami, Adamasu, Lamashrash, Bekiso, Becholsha, Visha. So the Gemara says, you know what normal human behavior is, and that is check your pockets all the time. Right? How much money do I have in my wallet? Okay, you can play this game later. And that is that if we went around the room, does everyone know exactly how much money they have in their wallet? Nope. Right. Okay.
That's
now, I know. Right. Well,
credit cards,
Zelle. Okay. Anyway, but back in the good old days, when currency was not only real, but currency was these big coins, so the typical human behavior is that everybody knew exactly how much money there was in their pocket at all times. Right, you basically you're walking around, and then just in other words, you do a random check on your pockets. Hey, what's going on here? And so this idea that having dropped money in Yesh Lo Midas, unlikely. It doesn't fit into normal human behavior. In other words, because remember the way I described it, there's a T1, there's a T2, and there's this like long period in between where you didn't know. By money, that's not true. By money, you pretty much discovered immediately. So it's not Yesh Lo Midas. Tashma number three. Igulit dvela v'kikar shanachlam harilu shalom. So amai v'halo yada d'nafamine. So again, the Mishnah gives us more examples of a cake of figs, loaves of bread. And again, presumably, you dropped them. And someone else picked it up. And once again, there's that period in between you dropping them and then later, only later, you discovering that you lost them. So asanami agav di'ikiri medi adabahu. So the Gemara says, yeah, but they're very heavy. And so therefore, when you dropped them, you knew immediately. Now, again, by the way, it gets to that conundrum of, if you knew immediately, so why don't you just simply go and pick it up? Okay, so, again, it's so much easier to discuss more abstractly. But again, the Gemara is basically arguing, in defense of Abaye, there was no lag between you dropping it and you discovering it. Okay. Next, Tashma. So now we're talking about wool. So wool that's dyed purple. Now wool that's dyed purple, so now it's these are not heavy items. So hasam nami agadah chashiv mishamushe memashmish behu uched Rabbi Yitzchak. So the Gemara says, okay, they're not heavy, but they're valuable. Wool dyed purple, super valuable. Just like the money you're checking your pockets at all times, so too with this purple wool, you're checking your purple wool wallet, whatever, purse, bag. Okay, sorry. The point is that you're doing a frequent check. There is no Yesh Lamidas. Yesh Lamidas has to assume that there's going to be a significant period between when you lost it and when you discovered you lost it. Okay, so you're walking through shul and you see a $100 bill lying around. Ah, fantastic. All right, so pick it up and you get to keep it. It's a Rishus HaRabim, public over there. Once the owner later on discovers that he lost it, so immediately he's going to recognize, oh, I'm never getting it back. Yeush, Hefker, you know, everything we discussed. At this point in time, we already know how the Gemara is going to defend. Even a little bit strange to understand why the Gemara thought this would be a good question. Again, we're talking about money. People are doing constant checks of their pockets at all times. They knew they dropped the money. When do you have the rights to get that leket? Okay, so we did this back in the first parak of Bamitzia not that long ago, and so we get to review this halacha. And that is that when you have leket in the field, the leket is collected by the aniyim. Okay, again, I'm just going to be really brief right now. Leket is whatever, it's matnos aniyim. So, but there comes a point in time where even whatever's left out in the field is now accessible to all. You don't have to be an ani and qualified to take it. Anybody can take it. When? So the Mishnah tells us, Mishiyach ba nemushos. Once that field's been swept and swept again, and the Gemara immediately explains, V'amina my nemushos v'amar av yochanan sabi da'azli ha'tigre, ishal kishamar l'kute bas l'kute. All right, two explanations of what nemushos are. So either the elderly are, you know, have swept the field, or you had two rounds of aniyim sweeping the field. Either way. So amai nehi da'aniyim da'acham yayishik aniyim b'duch da'achrin d'lo miyayish. So the Gemara says as follows, meaning the local aniyim now have given up hope. But in other words, aniyim that are one town over, so they haven't given up hope yet. And meanwhile, we said that it's yeush, and anyone can now take it. Oh. So once again, now this is a point for Rava, because what's happening over here is that the aniyim cross town over on the other side, so they will have yeush, but only later. And retroactively, it goes back to now. Because anyone can now go ahead and take it. So Amri, Kevin Deika, Aniyam Hacha, Hanach Mikari Yush Miyash, Amri, Aniyam Dasim Alakti Elohu. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the assumption was wrong. In other words, the assumption is that the Aniyam only the Aniyam one town over going to have Yeush later. The Gemara quickly corrects, no, that's not true. No. They write, in other words, the Aniyam on the other town know already. The locals got to it. So that their yeush is not later and retroactively plugged in. Now the yeush is now. Okay, good.
The aniyim have rights to it, but there's no maisa kinyan. How can they be miyayish something that's not there?
Right. Correct. In other words, right. The yeush over here is done by an entity, by a group. It's not the yeush of an individual.
But even the group doesn't have, there's no maisa kinyan. It's not theirs. It's just they have rights to it, but it's not
right,
theirs.
Right, correct. And in fact, the Gemara earlier, just to solidify your point, the Gemara earlier said it's not their field. In other words, the only thing the Torah does is allow them right to go into the property. So it's correct. And the Gemara treats the aniyim as if they are the de facto owners of the item. Okay. It's a great observation. Okay, let's pause over here. We did great. We did really good in terms of almost having been caught up and starting the second parak. Oh, good. We finished the first parak. First parak, what happens if I have a shofar found in anyone's hand other than the borrower? So it is it is not a legal document. It is not legally recognized. That's what that's how we ended the first perek. The Gemara challenged, the Gemara probed, but that's really the conclusion. There are a couple of notable exceptions at the tail end of that first perek, but a shover found in anybody else's hand, even the Malva's hand, and even if it was handwritten by the Malva, But it doesn't have significance. It's not. We don't assume that that shofar means it's proof of payment. The only time shofar is going to be proof of payment is only when it's in the hand of the borrower. Ad kan the first parak. And then this morning we had this chus of starting the second parak of the Masechta. And within the beginning of the second parak of the Masechta, the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, in which you find an item, you have to return it. Unless there's no simon, which now means that the owner was miyayish, which now means that it's hefker and finders keepers. And where and what we did in the first half of the daf today is just simply go over what exactly is considered a non-significant amount where you can pick it up and you can keep it. We gave a shear, a volume within a square area, and then the Gemara probed that shear, wanted to understand that shear a little bit better. Then on the Amud Beis of today, we embarked on one of the most classic debates in Shas, and that is Yesh Lo Midas. A person dropped an item, didn't know that it was dropped from him, later discovered that the item was dropped. Certainly from T2, he is going to be miyayish. He dropped an item with no simon on it. But does that yayish work retroactively back to T1? And the answer is, machlokus between Abai and Rava.